Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we're blessed to have one of my favorite guests back on, Miss Lynn Taylor, the Common Core Diva. And as usual, she's been on the hunt for everything that we need to know as human beings, parents, even children, about what's coming down the pipe and what they're trying next. I know people have heard about universal basic income, and that's been something that's been pushed out by members of our society who think that the government should take care of us from cradle to grave. But there's a new twist, and I wanted Lynn to come on and talk to us about it. She has a wonderful article entitled, How Much for the Children? And I think that parents and grandparents, anybody with a child in school, and quite frankly, in our society, needs to know how this universal basic income is going to be applied, or at least in one state, applied to the children. So Lynn, thank you so much for joining me today. It's always a pleasure and an honor to have you on.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Elena. And yes, you know, it really surprised me when I found out about this particular program. And the program that I'm talking about is called RX Kids. And you'll find that this is a supposedly pioneering program that's in Flint, Michigan, of all places. And it's going to be set as a role model for the rest of the nation, because this is supposed to be something that sweeps the nation. So it's not like Vegas where something stays there. No, it's going to, once it leaves Flint, it's going to go other places as well. And what I did in my article that you brought up was I gave you a link to a list of all the other towns and states that are rolling out universal basic income experiments, if you will. And one of them is in Jackson, Mississippi. They are on their fourth cohort of pregnant mothers, and they call it Magnolia Mothers, I believe it is. It's in the article. So if I got the name wrong, I do apologize. But the point is what Flint is going to be doing has been done in France. It's been done in other countries. And we're basically incentivizing pregnancy. But this is not just to pump up the national birth rate. This is geared to, number one, wipe out intergenerational poverty before it even starts, so that Johnny and Susie can have better academic success later in life.
Okay, I have to stop you, because every time I think about a controlled, managed economic system, it makes my hair stand on end. So who's getting to decide how much somebody should get in order to wipe out intergenerational poverty?
That's a great question. Yeah, that's a great question. And you'll be puzzled to find out that it is a public-private partnership. We have the Charles Mott Foundation, and they have pumped in $15 million and said, hey, we're going to make this a matching program. So RX Kids, the people behind it, if you can come up with 15 and match our 15, that'll be 30 million. So what happened was that RX Kids, which is a project of two public universities and all their partners, along with the Mott Foundation there in Michigan. So you've got the University of Michigan and the Michigan State University are in on this as well. You've also got several community-wide organizations who have involved themselves in this. Detroit has even gotten some of their partnerships in on this as well. And, you know, what happened was Mott said, okay, we're going to pump in $15 million. Then RX Kids started fundraising. They not only surpassed the $15 million matching, they went at least twice over, so that this program will be fully funded. And how it works is that every pregnant lady in Flint, Michigan, once this program kicks off in 2024 on Valentine's Day, every pregnant woman in that city will get $1,500, a one-time stipend, or cash allowance, as they're calling it, from this RX Kids, which is a public-private partnership, to use for prenatal care. It's a one-time fee. Now, once the child is born, Dr. Elena, that child will get $500 per month for the entire first year. Because after all, raising babies is so expensive, and at least one of the parents will have to give up income. And so this is supposed to help them be able to put it towards educational materials or baby care needs or anything like this. But the problem with this is the strings that come with this. And there are eight of them. And so I will list these if you're ready. Number one, data tracking. Well, of course, you cannot have money without data tracking. And the cash transfer will be on a debit card that is managed by an international company who does what? Tracks where the money goes, tracks who it belongs to. So we have those data trails. Then number two, predetermined health visits with outcomes. And anytime we hear the word outcome, we should absolutely, you know, you talk about your hair standing on end. Mine really stands out on this one. Because an outcome is a predetermined box that the government or the government entity has for you. Not who God you intended you to be, but what they think you should be. So then we have number three, doctor-patient conformity. We have number four, lots and lots of surveys. How are you doing? How are things going? So, of course, minding your business for you. Number five, compare the surveys to the other towns nearby, but who are not in the program. And one of the parameters for this is, hey, if you want in on this supposedly free money or universal basic income, you need to move to Flint. Okay, number six, the impact of a social contract. And anytime you have a contract that is an agreement between two or more people that has to be signed and has to be adhered to. So just what are you giving up through this social contract and what are you supposedly gaining? Number seven, well, for the city of Flint, they're going to be gaining this economic development. That's their skin in the game for this one. They will use the Federal Reserve tracking mechanisms to make sure that Flint becomes not just a poor place anymore, but a thriving economic one. Because after all, the mindset is, oh, well, the money's going to stay here in Flint. And then finally, the last one, micromanaging of your relationships by your community into your family.
Wow. I mean, when you think about this trap, for $6,000, they're going to own you lock, stock, and barrel. They're going to know everything about your family. And you're not going to move out of poverty because who can buy a week's worth of groceries costs more than that $600 that the child's going to get per month. And they're not the only child in the family, you can imagine. And maybe the other ones right. are older, so they don't get the money. I mean, this just sounds like you are entrapped in a system. The child will never know what it is to be free and not to be on the purse strings of the government. And they'll right. have no concept of any other reality. I mean, you're right. changing society from the little ones out for $6,000.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing they are so proud of. RX Kids is so proud of that they have one of the lead people on this project who was able to go to the IRS and rework the entire early childhood credit system. He's now come on board and he has manipulated the temporary assistance for needy family funding that every state gets. This, in this case, it's Michigan, to be able to say, oh, well, we're not spending money. We're just taking government money and we're just shifting it over. And after all, we're actually going to be saving money. It's that same argument about this shell game of our government money. The government money is our taxpayer dollar. It is not just the government's money.
True. I mean, from the standpoint of the economic side of this, for the other people who don't have children in that particular city, what happens to their services? You know, if they're not getting this leg up, I mean, is that constitutionally fair?
You know, somebody's going to bring that up. And then what do we do about the fact of someone is going to find a way to abuse this system? It happens every single time you have government doling out free services or free money. It happens every single time. Look at the number of people who down through the ages have been able to easily manipulate welfare or Medicaid or any of these other things. And so you're taking funding like the Temporary Assistance for Needy Family that combines both, Dr. Elena, and you have these idiots up there gloating over how they're manipulating this set of funding to go help this one city become all that it could be because it can't do anything on its own.
I want to clarify, Lynn, are you saying that any pregnant woman, regardless of her economic situation, can be a candidate for this, or is it economic based?
No, it is not. Okay. It's not economic based. This is why they're so proud of this is because they said, quote, it's universal and it's unconditional, end quote.
That's a bad concept right there. So they're not going to be taxed for it. It doesn't end up being income, I guess.
You know, interesting question, because that was not brought up in the webinar that I attended. But, you know, you have to understand at some point it's going to come back. If it's not through an income tax, like you just brought up, it will be through a pound of flesh.
So my question to you, tying this to your baseline, which is education.
Right.
You know, we've had all these education savings accounts. We've had all sorts of vouchers and those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately, is this kind of a backdoor to universal basic income in general, not tied to education?
You know, yes and no. They're touting this as, well, it's not really a universal basic income. This is a cash allowance. You know, trying to use language that makes it sound like it's something that it's not. It is definitely a form of universal basic income. It also could be if someone is working and they receive this cash allowance and this stipend every month for their child during its first year. It could be also known as a GBI or guaranteed basic income. Guaranteed is alludes to the fact that you're already working. Universal means, well, you just have to show up. And we need to understand that in other countries, they call it a United Solidarity Income. Now, doesn't that sound nice and socialist?
Oh, it absolutely does. On that note, let's take our first break because I want to delve into this further. It's all word salad to make you go to sleep. But when you really think about it, it's not a good thing. So let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor, and you should read her article, How Much for the Children. That's what we're discussing today. It's on her CommonCoreDiva.com website. Socialism has creeped in on so many levels, and it's come in with a brick, right? It's, if you have any questions, you're the worst person in the world. This is about helping people and everybody's good. But in actuality, it's taking away freedom. And it's really insidious. And
it absolutely is. And you ask about how did this really tie back to education? Well, education savings accounts are also a form of universal basic income because the source is the federal government. It is not your money being used the way you want. It's the government handing you out an allotment and then telling you this is how you'll spend it. Now, they swear, those who are behind the education savings accounts, they'll swear that you have all kinds of choice. They sat there and said, oh, yes, you get this education savings account money. You can use it on anything that Johnny and Susie need for education. Unless it's on a predetermined list, not made up by you, but by the government. You get anything off that list, you're okay. Get something off that list, you have to pay it back. So, you know, it's interesting you brought up about the taxation on this program in Flint. That remains to be seen. But I wanted to point out, here's another way that they're trying to justify this as some sort of educational do-good item. This was around the 1305 timestamp of this particular webinar. It helps higher education and their achievement. We want them reading, but we went to families because we want them to feel that they're being seen and heard. We want to work to improve the social contrast combining governments and institutions, because this is how we should care for each other.
God, it sounds just nonsensical, really.
Oh, so, it absolutely is.
And the parent takes the back seat, obviously, in this, because whoever has, as I say multiple times, whoever has the pocketbook has the power. And mm-hmm. if you have to sign a contract to give your power to the state to get this money monthly, you mentioned a credit card is given. This reminds me of the EBT card where mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's before COVID, or maybe it was during COVID, but people were allowed to use that to gamble. They were allowed to use it to buy all sorts of services that weren't your basic things of food and sustenance.
Right. Absolutely.
What's stopping you from doing that now with this?
You know, there's nothing. There's nothing in place that has been talked about that says, okay, wait a minute. Ooh, you're spending it for that? Well, that's not taking care of a baby. I mean, for them to do that, they would basically have to be sitting in your house every time you went and bought something. And it wouldn't surprise me if some sort of biometric or some sort of camera or such could be inserted into this as well. Or if it's not done right away, maybe if someone abuses it enough, that will be what happens for everyone else. I mean, this thing sounds super if you're on that side of the spectrum. But when you look at it from this other side, there are so many problems that could come from this. But I want to point out, one of the questions you had for me was the Campaign for Grade Level Reading. This was the entity that hosted this particular webinar back in late September that I attended, where they were propping up, oh, how fabulous and wonderful and how much of a gift of love this RX Kids was going to be. Campaign for Grade Level Reading, their mission is to disrupt generational cycles of poverty, because that will help ensure early school success. They have stakes in 46 United States, in Canada, and they micromanage DC, Puerto Rico, and the US Virgin Islands.
Okay, I have to ask this question. You said that they compare the people in this particular system with the people surrounding who are not in it.
Correct.
I'm going to be very cynical, but I'm going to ask, suppose the people around this system do better than the ones in this public-private partnership. Do you think that they would actually stop this program, seeing that it's not working? Or do you think, I mean, it's a question you can ask in an esoteric way. Do you think they'd ever stop this, even if it doesn't work?
No, they'll find a way to manipulate the data. I can just about bet you money they will, because I think I remember correctly when I heard that, you know, this is supposed to be like a 5-year experiment. So they have no plans on stopping this, even if they find out that people outside of Flint are doing better. What they're hoping is that people will become so envious of Flint, they'll start replicating this. And like I said, the list of the cities across the nation who are already experimenting with incentivizing birth or universal basic income in any form is a lot larger than anyone could ever imagine.
When you compare this to welfare, for example, when people are getting paid for having children, the more you had, the more money you got from the state. Is this some sort of newfangled version of that, but you're putting it on a digital scale where you can actually control and know the movements, the buying habits, the health access to the health system? And by that, I mean whatever public health boondoggle they want to come up with in order to get you hooked into the system. There's too much freedom, I would think, in the current system, because you can buy what you want. You can go and get your stuff at the gas station, wherever you're doing. No one's really following it. They just load that card once a month. Now there's a lot more, potentially, a lot more control over what you get. And you ask, how can they control it? They do it all the time by just denying the card, you know, the charge, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
They know where you're shopping. You can't shop in a certain place. You can't go on a certain website. You can't buy a certain product. I can imagine they can control it much, much more efficiently with this digital credit card system.
Well, yeah, because it's supposed to be breeding about a social economy where collectivism and interdependence is the mainstay of the economy. That's the end game here. And during this particular webinar, they were talking about, oh, France had done this particular program. Well, I looked at France, and it's in English, the active solidarity income. And what it did was it would give minimum income and services to support those who are seeking jobs, those returning to work, especially if you're low income, and those who just weren't getting enough income replacement, or what we call welfare. And the reason why the United States has been messing with this is because, again, you're taking a country that has universal health care, and you're comparing it to America, who doesn't have universal health care yet. But look at what's on one of the platforms, what has been on some of the platforms in the past elections, and will probably show up again in 2024. Some form of universal either health care or universal basic income will rear its ugly head again, because in the scheme of globalization, America is behind every other country because we just aren't socialistic enough.
You know, I've talked about this at the beginning, before the Affordable Care Act came online, and I was very dubious about how they needed to lower the standard of the United States to meet the rest of the world. And right. It's been an ongoing downslide since then. Everything has dropped. You know, our standard of living, our education system, our healthcare system, everything is based on a global paradigm, right? So from a healthcare standpoint, we use the ICD-10 system that's created by the UN for knowing what someone has a diagnosis of. So there's no privacy in that system. Once you go into a physician or whoever's office and they put in their electronic medical record, all that information can be gathered from data mining. So this is just putting the economic side. It's like they did it in stages, isn't it? So they did side. Now it's the economic side.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you look at the Finnish example of the universal basic income, because they did that nationwide for 2 years, and the Finnish ambassador to the United Nations went and made a speech, I believe it was in 2017, and she was glowing about how wonderful it was because it was a socio-political financial transfer program that was given by the government. It was legally backed up and equally set so that everyone on a national, regional, and local level could receive money, because it helped bring about, remember I just said about the social economy? Mm-hmm. It helped create what they called a sustainable public finance system. No mention, Dr. Elena, of your private salary at your job. No mention of, okay, I work down at Burger King and I just got my paycheck. No mention of what you are doing to provide for your family. Everything to do with looking to the government to not only feed your family, but now educate them, clothe them, and have their health care.
When you think about this and you take a bird's eye view of this, they're trying different mechanisms in different states to achieve the same thing. California, I don't know if you heard this, they just raised the minimum wage to $25 for their fast food employees, for the fast food industry. I'm not sure how that industry survives for the people.
It won't. It won't.
So where are these guys going to go? They're going to need basic income, because they're not going to have your typical job. And I don't see anything pushing entrepreneurship, ownership, opening up a small business. That doesn't seem to be the direction that it's going in. It's very centralized, very top down, no innovation, and no choice. I think that's what is driving people towards.
Right. Well, we can thank two things for that, and both of them you'll be able to understand when I say both of them are at fault. The first one was the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement, because what that did was that pretty much wiped out any future for small business. And people are going to think, oh, well, you're wrong about that. You know, my small business is still going. Well, if it is, that's the grace of God, because the point behind the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement is that every foreign entity except our Constitution and our Congress will decide for us in every aspect of our lives. And if you look at economy, if you look at healthcare, if you look at education, it was all limited to certain numbers, and we couldn't go beyond those numbers. So in other words, we could have 10 small businesses and 50 giant corporations, Dr. Elena. We can't go past that 10 limit on small businesses, but we could increase the large corporations if we wanted to. Because why? Because they're going to be in partnership with the government. That public-private partnership, again, is screaming at us. We have the same thing happening in other nations as well, where we're seeing this. And then, oh yes, you knew it was coming. COVID had a lot to do with this. But remember, that was part of the plan to have us become so dependent on the government that we would turn into those kids who used to play Mother May I.
I mean, you've spoken about community schools. You've spoken in the past about the fact that if you have a voucher or you have a charter school, or everything that parents thought that they had a choice with really isn't one. Is this just really a puzzle that's now coming together where no matter where you think you are, whether it's a private school, whether it's a religious school, whatever school it is, you're still going to be touched by this type of system?
Absolutely, you will, because let's stop and think about it. When they attach it to healthcare, well, that the healthcare doesn't respect where you go to school. It absolutely doesn't. You know, I want to make a correction real quick. I told you that it led to a social economy. I absolutely got that wrong. The universal basic income can also be called the United Solidarity Income. I did do that right. It's also known in other countries, as well as probably here pretty soon, as SSI, which means Social Solidarity Income. So think how easy it would be to switch from Social Security Income, Dr. Elena, to Social Solidarity Income. And that leads you to what's known as a solidarity income, economy. And that will breed collectivism and the interdependence. So let me say that again. That is the solidarity economy, not the social economy. So I was wrong on that. And it will breed collectivism and interdependence, not on each other, but between us and a government entity. We need to understand that there's a push also to create a special universal basic income expressly for mental health.
Let's take our second break, because I think I'm seeing a huge picture come together for me right now. So cool. Let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor. Before the break, you were talking about these catchments. Mental health is huge. Let's talk about it in a hot second, but what about the seniors? Since Social Security will become insolvent, can you imagine them also being placed into this type of pot or catchment?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, Mark Tucker, we can thank him, because once he embedbed the idea of Goals 2000 in America, which was that school to work and work because you can, you know, make an income to bump up the economy, he went to Estonia. And if you look at their system, their economy, you look at the way everything is set up, you are, from the time you're born to the time you pass away, you are in some form of government care, government funded. And, you know, when you are a senior citizen and you have outlived your usefulness for whatever work it was that you were doing for the government or in the name of the government, well, then you can go volunteer till you can't do anything anymore. And then once you can't do anything anymore, they will take care of your end time needs.
I'm sure they will. So with the push and the focus now on mental health, and, you know, we talked about this in other shows, how the money follows the child, right? And the seat.
Yeah.
Is there a differential payment, comes to mind, if someone is diagnosed with some sort of disability, whether that be mental or physical? Is because they have so much special ed going on in these schools. Is there a differential in terms of money? And is there some sort of push towards pushing children into these seats?
And, you know, that is an excellent scenario, because I think that's exactly where it's headed. Because what we've seen is the start, and that is where the schools were given the green light to turn Medicaid from per pupil funding into whole school funding. And so, yeah, that would be a logical next step in this horrible system. And as far as the a different kind of fund for universal basic income for mental health, I could see that happening too. This particular article that I'm looking at is from the United Kingdom, and it's from the Royal Society of the Arts, who's now known as the Young Foundation. And they're posing this question: can a universal basic income, which consists of cash payments made periodically on a universal and unconditional basis, can they absolutely use this to improve someone's health and well-being outcomes? So they're going into research to do this. And it says here that we have a mental health crisis and how universal basic income can address youth anxiety and depression. Because here's where they're stemming from this, Dr. Elena. They're blaming it all on COVID-19. In the article, it says COVID-19 pandemic widened the inequality and deepened the poverty in the United Kingdom while helping to normalize unconditional government payments via the furlough scheme. This set conditions for a renewed interest in universal basic income, both within political parties and among the wider society. So you have many from across the political spectrum who have said that their support for UBI and UBI, and they're using Scotland as the example here, could actually make it happen. They're telling you the Welsh government has one of the most generous basic income schemes out there in the world. And then they say, oh, wait a minute. But if we do this for mental health, oh, fewer would have to be diagnosed and fewer would have problems finding where to get help. Oh, and if we do this, oh my gosh, all the psychological impacts of a guaranteed income, they'll be so relieved.
Hmm. Well, you know what happens when you're hammer, everything's a nail, right? So they're going to find people who need their help, who need to be medicated, who need to be in their system, because they can't handle it on their own. So you're creating the need, and then you find you create the problem, and you find someone who's going to fit that need.
Absolutely,
no sense from a societal standpoint. What kind of society? I mean, it's another existential question. What kind of society do they want? Do they want people to be in? I know the answer, but I'm going to let you answer it. Individuals where they can pursue God-given talents, find what they're good at in the way that they want to, and pursue it. You're going to have a lot of unhappy people, a lot of people who really will probably need some mental help because they're not happy. And it's based on them not being able to fulfill their own destiny. Someone's deciding your worth, and that's really, it's tragic.
Oh, it absolutely is. But we're seeing this happen. I mean, think about the number of shows we've done, Dr. Elena, where we've talked about precisely this, where from an education standpoint, you have an assessment that is pigeonholing you into a career which this particular universal basic income or guaranteed basic income will slot you for life. You're looking at healthcare systems that are going to micromanage your entire family and then tell you, oh, but it's for your own good. I think the kind of society that we are turning into at breakneck speed would be that one. And I think probably the biggest example would be if you go and you look at the former Soviet Union, pick any town you want and then go study. Who did they work for? They didn't work for their own family or their own gain. No, they worked where they were told. They had to produce X number of whatever to feed everybody else or to clothe everybody else per day. And if you didn't meet that quota, well, then you were shipped off to the gulag. If you were a nonconformist, you were shipped off to the gulag. If you did anything that rocked the boat, you were dealt with in this very punishable way. And so we're not that far removed from that right now. And people are going, oh, but we're not a communist nation. Oh, really? Well, let's look at what communism is. Let's look at what socialism is. Let's look at the roots of both of them that are in Marxism, where you had a caste system of the rulers and those who would be ruled.
That's a very good point. And from the standpoint of their economy, you're absolutely right. It's not like you had a choice of opening your own. You were part of a cog in this system. And mm-hmm. So I want to backtrack to this great level reading impact, this campaign for great level reading impact.
Sure.
How does that affect going out from that, the family? Because we mentioned that it's not just the child that gets sucked into this. It's also the parent.
Right. Well, let me see here, dear. They have programs for you that if you are not the family that the government thinks you need to be, well, they can, by George, set you up with one that will help you to become that family that the government needs you to be. Now, I say that with a little bit of sarcasm because I know that there are parents out there who actually do need help. I am not making fun of them. I'm saying to treat everyone the same way with the same needs is wrong because not everyone has the same needs. Not every parent needs help. Not every family needs a leg up. I mean, if you go and you look at the number of families who have been dirt poor and the most happy, well-balanced people they could possibly be, what's wrong with that? Who's to say that success and money are what make us happy or make us a great family? They don't. It's love. It's nurture. It's caring. It's being free, doing what God designed you to be, not what the government tells you.
I absolutely agree with that. And to segue back to what you said about the, you know, the Soviet system, yes, they had a lot more punitive, overtly punitive ways to control people. But I think this digital system, this digital income, everything being virtual is the same thing. If you get locked out, you can't buy bread or you can't, you know, go to your use transportation. You're basically in the same system, but you just happen to be stuck in your house as opposed to a centralized location. So it does accomplish the same thing. It's more of a velvet glove, component to it, but the end point is still the same.
Well, absolutely. That reminds me, there was this lady in, I think she was in China, and this hit social media. And I'm sorry, I don't remember how long ago. It's not been too horribly long ago. But she was telling you, look, I thought I was doing good by signing up for the social credit system. And, you know, I went out and I bought my groceries and I did everything I was supposed to. And somehow, some way, she messed up. And so she goes to go home. And she cannot open her door because her door has been locked because she messed up somehow in this system. She didn't do something right. Well, what happened was her pet was on the other side of the door. Her pet needed to use the bathroom. Her pet needed to be fed. She was literally locked out of her own home and denied being able to care for her pet. So if you don't care about kids, but you care about pets, that might get your attention.
Just the fact that that can hang over your head.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you don't know what could put you a foul thing. You don't know. And we're getting to that point a little bit where people are afraid to talk, to say things, truthful things, because they don't know what's going to happen to them. They can be canceled, fired, whatever.
Right.
It's not already moving towards training people into being compliant and docile.
Well, absolutely. And this fits in not only with Sustainable Development Goal number one, because if you'll remember on the Sustainable Development Goal priority of things, poverty is the very first one. And so for my article that I wrote on this that has just come out from the American Policy Center, That was the vein in which I wrote that particular article. So I took the one that you mentioned from my blog, the How Much for the Children, and I expanded on that one for the American Policy Center, because this is my third article on one of the Sustainable Development Goals. And so you have that. But then think about poverty attaches to health care, which is Sustainable Development Goal number 3. It ties to Sustainable Development Goal number 4, which is education. Number 5, which is gender equality. Number 8, which is decent work for all. Number 17, which are the partnerships by which to have all this happen. And number 16, for strong organizations and peaceful existence.
You know, all these things have a catch to them. And so I want to ask, I'm going to take a break in a minute, but I want to start the question with, what does zero poverty really mean? It's certainly not you live a high life and you're passing generational wealth to your children from what we just talked about. What does it mean really, in your opinion?
Well, it means that you are going to be just as destitute as everyone else, and that you will be just like everyone else, depending on the government to clothe you, educate you, feed you, and take care of you.
With the caveat that you better toe the line or they won't.
That's precisely right.
Man, I mean, are people, have you heard or written or read anything about how the people of Flint feel about this? This is people proselytizing. But what do the people of Flint think about this?
From the sales pitch that I got, everybody in Flint is super excited. They can't wait. And of course, they're picking Valentine's Day of 2024 to roll this out, because after all, this is such an exciting and loving thing that Flint is doing out of the goodness of its collective heart for its community.
It's just really, it's maddening, honestly, that we've gone through 3 years of mandates and coercion to get people to do what the powers that be want them to do. You won't work. You won't be able to go to the hospital. You can't get a transplant. You can't get health care unless you do what we say. People, I don't understand how people can go through that and really think that this time it's like a foot, Lucy and the football on this thing. Why would it be any different this time? On that note, I'll let you answer that on the other half of the break. So let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor. And again, you can go to her website, commoncorediva.com. And Lynn, I stopped you from answering the question, but what's going to be different about this? How can people be this oblivious after living through this situation where I hear this every day? I was forced to. I needed it for my job. I had to make my mortgage. I had to travel. What do they think is going to go down with this?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I think because they believe they've been through the worst, and the government went and fixed everything, and we're back to normal, that there couldn't possibly be anything worse. But my question to them would be, you didn't trust your government before, so why would you continue to trust the most corrupt system that we have, which would be our healthcare system, that this would be somehow different? And, you know, I don't understand what they don't know. And this is one of the things that could be a solution is their town considering this? And this would be one of the things that I would charge them with, is to go look, read both articles, you know, the one from American Policy Center that I think it's called Buying Out Flint is the title of that one, I believe. And then mine, which is How Much for the Children. And then go look at, follow the resources, go look at the number of cities, and then consider this. You are being groomed to become what's known as human capital, because in this solidarity economy, you are worth more on a digital cyberspace existence than you are as a living, breathing human person. And human capital is a term that was created by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, to marry to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. And it goes right up there with that dastardly definition of outcomes that I gave earlier about government deciding who you should be based on some sort of test. And that could include not only education, but healthcare. So your solutions would be to look at where this is going on, to start educating those people around you of, look, it may sound like sliced bread, but it is not. This is the worst thing that could possibly happen to our town. Because remember, this was broken down by national, regional, and local levels. So we have the UN's regional garbage coming in as well. There are so many things we can do to help each other become aware of this and start speaking out. Because, you know, ask the question about how does Flint really feel about this? Because all I've heard is sales pitch and all kinds of wonderful BS about how great this is going to be. Not one person besides the very few of us who have talked about this particular program have really started to ask the hard questions. And we've got to be so diligent and so hard-nosed, Dr. Elena. We cannot be nice on this one.
No, niceness gets you further down the hole, frankly. And yeah, we're seeing from now in retrospect, the people talk about the healthcare system, they've lost doctors and nurses. They don't have enough people to maintain the healthcare system because of their mandates. And they don't talk about the people who left, were forced out, decided to rule their own destiny. And now they're in a position where it doesn't work. They don't have enough people. People overwork. The pharmacy industry is in trouble because pharmacists are overworked. A lot of people left. And so they're doing more work. This is a safety issue from a standpoint of a healthcare
system. Right. But here's another danger, though, in that. Yeah, you got rid of all the good guys. Now look who's going to come in. Those who are a party to the system, those who have conformed to the system, and those who have lost their conscience when it comes to what is good, fair, right, and just, what is lovely and pure. They've lost that, and they've replaced it with the government jargon.
Very true. And we're still, we're talking about solutions at this point. You're absolutely right. I think it's time. I mean, there's a lot of regret that I see out there.
Oh, yeah.
And from that standpoint, you need to harness that regret into action of withdraw your consent. So just because they're offering this money doesn't mean you have to take it, correct?
Well, that's right. But no one said, oh, what would happen if you decided not to? I mean, let's face it, you're in Flint, you're pregnant, and you don't want to take this money. Are they going to say, well, tough bananas, you're going to take it anyway because you live in the city of Flint? Are they going to make you move? I don't know. Nobody ever answered that question.
Well, see, that's what we need to actually explore, right? It's the fact that people don't raise up, don't give a counter argument and just do it. That's what they depend on. When you start questioning and actually giving a little pushback, these are the biggest, house of cards. They fold because they don't have an answer for when I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. What are you going to do? You know, that's what everybody needs to have, that little backbone at this point.
So absolutely, that
this march towards crushing us stops, because right now it's voluntary. So is COVID, quite frankly. It was voluntary. People could choose to
But that's not the way it was sold. And that's not the way this RS Kids is being sold either. But I would say the biggest solution, what are the constitutional and biblical ways in which we can help each other? It's not the government's job to help us. They have taken that role over because we have abandoned that. And we also need to understand that protecting our family, no matter what it costs you, goes back to God giving you the inherent right to be a parent, as well as the government assured Fourth Amendment right that no government should come in and mess with you. But if you don't know your constitution, if you don't know your inherent rights, you really can't protect your family. So start looking at what you do know, question what you don't know.
It's about putting your skin in the game. I think we need to stop having people want people to take care of us. It's our job. You know, it's our job with the grace of God and God, you know, under the guidance of God to take our power back and to control our own destiny. And if it's pushing you a counter to what you know is moral and what is ethical and what is right, then you shouldn't do it. You know, right? It's the fact that everybody's just going along is empowering the system.
It absolutely is.
It's not a powerful system. This is not law. This is public-private partnership. It's set up. But there's nobody saying someone's going to kick in your door and make you take the money. You're not going to go to jail if you don't take the money. I mean, that's a rigid system. This is not what we're talking about. It's all fluff, really.
You know, that's how they get started. They make it feel good, so you'll get nice and warm and fuzzy. And then what happens when it does turn into, yes, they will send you somewhere if you don't do what they say? I mean, that could very well be in the system as well. You know, who knows? They're going to look at this particular supposed five-year experiment and probably find ways to tweak it, Dr. Elena, to make it even more mandatory.
Not if we, you know, withdraw our consent. You can say right. No. You can try to, I mean, again, from the education standpoint, because this is your wheelhouse. What about homeschooling and actually going to this parallel system where you have a teacher, you have like a little house in a prairie situation, and you teach your children based on like a pod where you're not using any of this? Is that still a possibility?
Sure, absolutely. Especially if you live within the city limit of Flint. Because again, this was for everybody. This was not reserved for a special few. And when it's for everybody, that includes those who are in the public system, the private system, and even the homeschool system. So you have to be super, super careful not to fall for the false arguments that this somehow, because you do homeschool, you will be safe. You might be safe for a little bit, but will you when all the dust settles? That's a question you need to be prepared not only to answer, but to be prepared to exist after.
Well, you know, you have to go out on faith a lot of the time. And, you know, what we're staring at is not a good situation. I can't believe that people think that getting $6,000 for a year is going to change your economic future when the child has, you know, another 17 years before they're no longer a minor. Is that supposed to really push you forward, right? One parent has to stay home from work. You're in more of an economic, you know, minefield than you would be opening up your own shingle or, you know, opening up your own and doing for yourself. You know, I can see this is really, the system is trying to break and give us basically the haves and have nots. And I don't know if the middle class is going to really, it's under siege. I don't know if the middle class sees it in this way. Do you find that people who have means, who are able, who work now, who have, you know, income coming in, who are self-sufficient to a degree, I don't know if you speak with those folks, but are they in tune with this? I know they're trying to get the people who are the most insecure financially, physically, because that's the easiest group, because they're really under siege and it's obvious. What about the people who aren't? Are they going to fall into this trap, do you think?
I absolutely do. I mean, look how many of them fell, no matter where their income level was when COVID hit. I mean, they all rolled over and just said, yeah, let's do it. And as far as the middle income people, I don't know that there's so much of a middle income anymore. You look at the cost of living right now, and we have middle income people who are having to start looking at, okay, I can't make it from paycheck to paycheck. What am I supposed to do? And, you know, by and large, most of the ones that I know that there are supplemental programs out there, but they will not use them.
You know, we're in a tough position, but I still think I'm optimistic that we have enough power and we have enough time, because it's really time sensitive at this point, to think about every step you take, every move that you make from an economic standpoint and educating your children. And again, I think this is, everything moves in a wave, doesn't it? If there's enough people who stay up, I'm not going to do this, and become the alternative, those that are just going along but can actually see a way out, maybe that will be the driving force to keep them from, you know, to give them a backbone on this.
You know, I sure would love to talk to those people, because, you know, we have to remember there are so many more of us, we the people, than there are those in charge. And we need to remember, this was a cartoon that was, it's probably older than a lot of people are, but it's The Wizard of Id. And I don't know if anybody remembers that or not, but you had the king, and he's in his castle, and he's come out, and he is addressing the people. And he says, well, you know the golden rule, don't you? And the peasants rise up and go, yeah, he who has the gold has the power. Well, we need to understand our children are our gold. We cannot let those in power take that gold from us.
That's a beautiful way to end the show. I think you said a mouthful. And I hope every parent, grandparent, anybody who has a child or knows a child will stand up for them. Lynn, how can people reach you and read what you do?
Okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Elena. It's always a joy to be with you. My website is www.commoncorediva.com. If you wish to email me questions or you would like me to come speak, the email you need is info@commoncorediva.com, and I will be in touch with you. You can find me on Twitter or X or whatever they're calling it now, at Common Core Diva. You can find me on Facebook. And that's pretty much it. You can also find my work on American Policy Center. You want to go to the Sustainable Development Goal tab and just look for my articles. There are three of them. You can also look out on TNT Radio. I am on, the Jorge Majoric show. That usually runs in the evening times. He is based in Mexico, but he has been so impressed with my work that he has considered me an honorable guest.
Lynn, thank you so much for joining me. I just love having you on. I just keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.